This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Today, Enterprise Explores five ideas to shake up the startup ecosystem and funding landscape here in Malaysia and Southeast Asia with Dr. Sivapalan Vivekaraja, Senior Partner and Co-Founder of Scale Up Malaysia Accelerator. Post-pandemic startups now find themselves in an interesting space, navigating through an uncertain environment, courtesy of the higher interest rate environment, the subsequent funding winter, lower valuations, and of course, down rounds as well. On top of that, the struggle to raise funds has caused companies to resort to things like cost-cutting measures such as layoffs. In a recent article in The Edge, Doc Siva notes that this downturn has changed investor perspectives and startup founders will need a mindset change to succeed over the next few years. Tapping into his 25 years of experience in the Malaysia tech ecosystem, as well as his startup investing history, having made 52 investments in total, both as an angel investor and through Scale Up Accelerator, he proposes five ideas to change up the narrative and move away from the Silicon Valley growth-driven model that has been the de facto way of doing business in the scene. In this conversation, we will get into and break down each of the five ideas in more detail. But to give you a sense of what's coming ahead, here are the headlines for what he used, based on what he used in the article. Number one, build an enduring business. Two, change the growth model. Three, limit the amount of money raised. Four, spend time on the business, not fundraising. And five, for enduring businesses, an IPO is a better exit. We're going to dive into each and every one of these in more detail. So stick around for all that and more. And if you have any thoughts or questions, you can WhatsApp us on our U Mobile number at 018-789-8899. Or as always, you can reach us over on X at BFM Radio. Again, that our number is our U Mobile number is 018-789-8899. Doc Siva, welcome back to the show. It's good to see you back in the studio.
Thank you, Roshan. It's always a pleasure to be here. First time this year.
Yeah, first time this year. And hopefully far from the last time this year, Doc.
Thank you.
To set up this conversation, recap for some of the challenges facing the startup, both startups and the VC ecosystem post-pandemic. I gave a little bit of a teaser to it earlier.
Thank you, Roshan, for having me. The scene has actually changed quite substantially post-COVID. Mm. If you look at the venture capital industry, post-global financial crisis in 2008-2009, the industry actually grew and it peaked in 2021. In 2021, venture capital was at the highest, investment was also at the highest. And this is despite 2020 being COVID years. But in 2022 and 2023, venture investing actually dropped significantly. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, a lot of companies couldn't raise funding. And VCs were going around telling their companies, you have to now start looking at getting on a path to profitability. We need to start looking at whether you're cash flow positive and so on. Now, the narrative before this, it might come back again in a few years, who knows? But the narrative before this has always been, raise money from VCs, push up your revenue, regardless of whether you make money or not. Just keep pushing up your revenue, and hopefully your revenue gets to a certain size when someone will then acquire you. So if you look at that model, it's been very much about pumping up your revenue and hoping that someone will buy it, which means it's a build and flip narrative. Mm-hmm. And everyone has been stuck in this narrative because this is the Silicon Valley narrative. It's been going on for years. So we're all stuck in that narrative. But when the crisis hit and funding was no longer available, this narrative no longer works. Many companies couldn't raise funding. So if you're now making staggering losses, and in some cases staggering losses, what do you do then, right? So this is now the problem. And the fundamentals of building a business is about getting to cash flow positive and getting to a profitable situation as soon as possible, not keep losing money for 10 years and hoping someone buys you out. So I think this narrative has to change.
I guess a key thing that plays into this is that in the US, you can list a loss-making company, whereas you can't do that here in Malaysia. One of the requirements is for companies to have a proven history of profitability. I guess the big question here, Doc, is a lot of this does sound like common sense, but you should build a business, you know, that works, that doesn't have a broken business model. But I guess, was this all down to this extended period of cheap capital that not just allowed it to go on, but allowed, I guess, certain bad toxic traits to come through?
So I think we have all been stuck in the Silicon Valley narrative. This is the Silicon Valley narrative. It might work in Silicon Valley. Obviously, it does work in Silicon Valley because if you pump up your revenue, you get to a certain size. In the Silicon Valley, there are many entities that can buy you over. In the Silicon Valley, you've got multi-billion dollar companies, trillion dollar companies that keep acquiring other companies, whether it's for market share or for technology. In this part of the world, that hardly ever happens. If you look at Malaysian corporations, even the large ones, hardly any of these corporations buy the startups here. And if you look at IPOs as well, yes, in the US, you can list a company that's losing a lot of money because, you know, people buy into the narrative that, you know, somewhere down the line, these guys will make money. In this part of the world, IPOs, although there is no requirement for a profit, you can even list on Bursa Malaysia with no requirement for a profit, but the market does not accept these kind of companies. So even if you talk to an investment banker, and they try and list your company, nobody will buy in if you're losing money. But if you talk to an investment banker and you say, hey, I'm making 10 million ringgit in profit, every single investment banker will jump in and say, I can list this company. So I think this is the problem that we are facing here, right? We have been using the Silicon Valley model that works in Silicon Valley, but doesn't work here. And we're still pushing that same agenda. And that's why companies are struggling. Now they can't get exits. So one of the reasons why I wrote this is because I've invested in so many companies. And when we look at, you know, who's going to acquire them, nobody's there to acquire them. So we can't, they can't get exits, we can't get exits. So as an investor, I can't get exits either, you know. So this whole narrative is not good for investors either, right? And then when we try and IPO some of these loss-making companies, no investment banker wants to take them on. Now, we could do it in Australia because the Australian market was quite open to loss-making companies. But ever since this COVID and all of this, they also have changed. It's hard to list a loss-making company in Australia either. So this whole narrative of pumping up your business and you know, losing money and trying to get an exit just doesn't work.
So the funnel's getting clogged, essentially. The pipeline's getting clogged.
Yes.
Which will, I guess, stagger the, will put a little bit of a stutter throughout the ecosystem. There will be ripple effects.
That's right. It's getting clogged on both sides. One is VCs are not investing because they are looking for more solid companies now. On the other end, you can't exit because there's no one to buy you out. So the entrepreneurs are being squeezed on both ends. And something has to change.
Now, Doc, you're a multi-cycle investor. You've, again, 25 years in the business. You've seen crashes and burns. You've seen boom times and the consequences of each. Is this not just a natural part of the boom and bust cycle?
So that's an interesting question. Everything goes in cycles, whether the stock market or the venture capital industry goes in cycles. But I think the entrepreneurs must break out of this cycle. We should no longer think about a venture capital narrative. We should go back to the fundamentals of building a long-term, enduring, multi-generational business. This solves a lot of problems for entrepreneurs. Because if you build a company that's profitable, you don't even have to worry about running around looking for funds. You can look at the long term. You can build a business that, you know, you can pass on to the next generation if you want, or you can get it listed. And, you know, if you think of a company like Vitrox, I heard on the radio just now they talked about Vitrox, right? Chu from Vitrox built a multi-generational business.
Yeah.
You know, and he raised, he listed his company in 2004 or something like that. Previously, he raised money from angels. He didn't raise money from VCs. The company is doing so well today. But if you look at a lot of companies that were flipped, all the entrepreneurial companies that were flipped, they all disappear. They're no longer there. In fact, many companies that were acquired by larger players actually die in the end. So is this what entrepreneurs really want to do? And in the conversations I have with a lot of entrepreneurs, because, you know, we work with entrepreneurs a lot, actually most of them don't want this, but they're stuck in this cycle. That's why I'm saying we need to break out of the cycle.
And you have five ideas to do that, and we will get into those ideas in a little bit, Doc. So don't go away just yet. Folks, you're listening to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today we're exploring how the downturn in the startup ecosystem has changed investor perspectives and why startup founders will need a mindset change to succeed over the next few years. Helping me with this is Dr. Sivaplan Vivekaraja, Senior Partner and Co-founder of Scale Up Malaysia Accelerator. I'm Roshan Karnasen. We'll be back in just a bit. So keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Binge-friendly movies. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Roshan Karnasen, and you're now listening to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And I'm pleased that I got a chuckle out of our guest today, Dr. Sivaplan Vivekaraja, Senior Partner and Co-founder of Scale Up Malaysia. The joke seemed to appeal to him. Today on Explores, we're talking about the downturn and how that's changed investor perspectives. And Doc Siva's five recommended mindset changes that founders need in order to succeed over the next few years, even VCs perhaps. Doc Siva, five ideas you propose. I'm going to recap them very quickly before we break them down one by one. Build an enduring business, change the growth model, limit the amount raised, spend time on the business, not fundraising for enduring businesses, and IPO is a better exit. So let's start with the first idea to craft a new narrative, new startup narrative for Malaysia and the region. Break down for us and elaborate the bit moving away from the build and flip model towards building an enduring business. What do you mean by this? And how would you like to see it realized?
Okay. Let me start with the build and flip model. So the build and flip model is a very typical Silicon Valley model. You raise money, you push up your revenue as much as you can, and somewhere down the line, someone will acquire you. So if you talk to investors, they always say our exit plan is an acquisition. Someone will acquire our companies, right? Our portfolio companies. Does this work in the US? It absolutely does. Because in the US, you've got multi-billion dollar companies, you've got trillion dollar companies, you've got the Microsofts of the world and all who have so much money.
Or as big today because of the acquisitions they've made along the way.
Exactly. And they have so much money because they generate so much of cash that they can just go and buy all of these companies. You come back to this part of the world, you have very large entities in Malaysia, very large listed companies in Malaysia, GLCs in Malaysia. Do they make any acquisitions at all? Almost none. You go back to Singapore, same thing. They are not buying companies. So this model that takes makes this assumption that someone will buy your company doesn't really work. Now, if you cannot get an exit, what do you do then? And what do investors do? So if I look at it from the investor perspective, our funds normally are about 7 years. So we need to invest and exit in about 7, maybe 8, 9, 10 years at the most, right? Now, if I can't exit, what do I do? I end up asking my entrepreneurs to buy back the shares from me, and I'm lucky if I can make a 2x or 3x return. So that doesn't work for investors as well. So it doesn't work for investors, doesn't work for entrepreneurs. So why are we doing all of this? That's why we need a new model. We need a model where entrepreneurs build enduring businesses that will last many generations. Now, when you talk about building an enduring business, it can only endure if you start making profits. If you keep losing money, you have to keep raising money. And if the money tree stops, you're finished. So that's why I'm saying build an enduring business, which means your mindset from the beginning must be, I need to make profits and I need to make sure I'm generating a lot of cash flow, which means my margins must be strong, my gross margins, my profit margins must be strong. If you can build a highly profitable business, this business can last forever. And I have met entrepreneurs recently, you know, all these Chinese new open houses and all. They're coming up to me and saying, Doc, I'm changing the way I'm doing things because I like this. You know, I want to build a business that's profitable. One entrepreneur I met at Cradle Fund's Chinese new open house came up to me and said, Doc, I am profitable. I don't even need to raise money now. And I'm so happy. And I want to build a longer-term enduring business. So if you want to do this, you can. You don't have to follow the narrative of the West. Let's follow fundamentals of how you build a business in the first place. And the fundamentals of building a business is build a profitable business. That's all I'm saying.
I guess the irony is that Asian, don't want to stereotype, but okay, let's say Malaysian entrepreneurs, for example, we have seen this attitude where you want to get the profitability, but unfortunately in the past, they've been forced into this cookie cutter model of, oh no, no, we don't worry about profitability now. If you want to get my money, I want to see 7x growth in the next 3 minutes, you know, like I want to see growth at all costs.
Yes.
Now that's changed.
Yes.
The bill has come due, and some entrepreneurs may be screaming at the wall saying, yeah, this is what we told you like 10 years
yes.
ago. In fact, I can hear in the distance even listeners saying, yeah, like, duh, this sounds like the way business should be done.
Yep.
Build a business that is going to make profit in the longer term. Is that perhaps now, given the legacy that we have now in the last 10, 15 years, is that going to be easier said than done?
It is easier said than done, but I don't think it's impossible to do. So I think even some of the companies that have raised money, right, and haven't been able to raise the next round, some of the companies that we work with in the Sunicon program, for example, have actually said that, you know, they have had to retrench 30%, 40%, 50% of their staff. But, you know, they come back and say, hey, 1 year later, I'm profitable. If I had gone on the same route on just to keep hiring more people and spending the money, they couldn't see profitability for years. But now that they've done it, they can see profitability. And one of the founders actually told me, guess what? My guys are even more productive now than the extra 30, 40% that I had. So it can be done. It does need a change in mindset. You do need to look at your pricing strategy, how you sell your products or services. But if you do it, and how you manage your costs, right? We'll come back to that with some of the other ideas I have. But it can be done, and some of them have started doing this already, and they are happier for it.
And on that note, the second point that you make in this, or the second idea that you're proposing, is changing the financial model away from this purely revenue-driven model that we've seen, this flag waving of just grow at all costs towards this profit-driven model. Could you elaborate a little further on why this is so important to you? I think you've done some so far, but also how we could see this, I guess, turn out.
Okay. Sometimes you can't blame entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
A lot of VCs are telling entrepreneurs, I need to see 2X, 3X revenue growth every year. So to get 2X, 3X revenue growth every year, actually no one talked about profits. To be fair to the entrepreneurs, a lot of VCs don't talk about, I want to see 2X, 3X profits every year. They say, I want to see 2X, 3X revenue every year. And you've got to do it year after year after year. How do you get 2X, 3X revenue? You've got to spend a lot of money. Whether you're spending on marketing or sales or whatever, you just got to keep spending this money to get 2X, 3X revenue. And they do this because it's a requirement sometimes. I've had companies that VCs have invested. They're not interested in looking at anything else but your revenue growth. Every month when we meet, they say, okay, what's your revenue growth? How many percent did you grow? Did you grow 10%, 20% this month? They are being driven by this. Because the VCs also think, by doing this revenue growth model, we can get an exit. But you know what? A lot of potential acquirers are not willing to acquire companies that are losing significant amounts of money. Can you imagine if our biggest companies in Malaysia, whether it's Maybank or Sime Darby, if they had acquired Grab, you know, all of the profits have been wiped out because if Grab's losses come in finished, all of the profits are wiped out. So they will never do it. They need profits, right? So I think this whole thing about how to change this, one is you have to be very capital efficient. By capital efficient, I mean you've got to use your money wisely and you've got to watch your bottom line. For the longest time, entrepreneurs don't watch the bottom line. They only watch the top line. And that's driven by the VCs and investors themselves. So I think if you go back to fundamentals of watching the bottom line and getting to cash flow positive and profitability, many companies have started doing that in the last couple of years. So there is proof that it can be done.
I don't think I've heard the term capital efficiency been used so much as I have in the last 1 year of listening to, because I like to listen to a lot of different podcasts out there. And capital efficiency, even in tech companies, right? So you look at Facebook, for example, all the big tech companies just in January last year, I think we saw 90,000 jobs cut. This year, January, we saw 30,000 jobs cut, more or less. And what did the last earnings season show us? Facebook had blowout earnings because they're finding more productivity from fewer people. So there's a lot more, I guess, of this that we will likely see and the ramifications going forward. Speaking of too much money, your third proposal or your third idea here is that too much money is bad for business and for the psyche of the founder. And with that, the third proposal is to limit the amount of fundraising. I can already hear people screaming, dog. what limitations do you propose here? And, you know, realistically, how do we limit capital raises?
Okay. The first thing I want to say is, you know, it's like a badge of honor when you raise a lot of money.
Mm.
It is not a badge of honor when you become profitable.
Mm.
So this mindset change has to be there. Now, a lot of companies go out there and say, wow, I've raised $200 million, $100 million. And to them, that's a badge of honor. But when you raise this kind of money, first thing is, you're giving up a lot of equity, so you're diluting your shares.
Mm.
And you dilute all investor shares as well. So everyone that came in earlier gets significantly diluted because you raised a lot of money. The second thing is, a lot of them raise this money and then try and figure out, what do I do with this money? If you raise $200 million, in Malaysia, it's almost ₱1 billion.
Mm.
Honestly, I don't see any company in Malaysia able to spend ₱1 billion effectively. So what happens is, they want this badge of honor in terms of, I raised so much of money. And then when they raise it, they don't know what to do. And then they will spend it. Now, guess what happens when you spend $1 billion? You actually have losses that's going to be hugely significant.
Mm.
So if you raise $200 million, and let's say maybe you spend it, your revenue comes in a little bit, but you actually will have significant losses. So the more money you raise, the first thing is, the higher your losses are likely to be, because you're supposed to spend the money.
Mm.
Secondly, when you raise that kind of money, you will be spending it in all kinds of stupid things.
Mm.
You'll be hiring people and paying them too much.
Mm.
We know, for example, there are companies that hire marketing people and pay them 4 times as much as what they were earning earlier. People get paid $20,000 to do a marketing job, you know? And you end up hiring a lot more people than you actually will need. So this is where there is zero capital efficiency when you have too much money. And then when you have the money, the VCs are going to say, again, go back to the investor, they will say, what are you going to do with the money? Spend it. I want to see my 2x, 3x growth every year. So you are forced to spend it as well. You must raise money that you will actually spend effectively, productively. And that, I can tell you, means you don't have to raise that much money. Do you have to raise $200 million? You don't have to. If you are doing business in this region, costs are not that high, right? So what I'm saying is, raise as much money as you need, but don't raise too much money just because you think it's a badge of honor. Raise it for the right reasons. And raise it and spend it effectively, so be more capital efficient. I see people who raise less money becoming very creative at how they spend it and are very efficient at how they spend it. Compared to the guys who raise a lot of money, they just burn the cash very quickly.
Mm.
And I've got founders who have done that and say, I wish I did not raise that kind of money. So that is a lot of things that people can learn about this, you know. But being capital efficient means you should raise just enough money to help you get to profitability. Not raise enough money that, you know, you spend it all, you get to revenue growth, and then I got to raise again in 18 months. You know, when you raise too much money, you will do stupid things, actually.
I think, I guess just reading off that is, when you raise that money also, it comes with certain conditions, right? Mm. It's not free for you to do actually whatever you want. Mm. It comes with conditions of, we want to see the 3X growth every year.
Yes.
And then you have to figure out ways to use that capital to grow, and that's customer acquisition for the D2C companies,
for example. That's right.
And it can become this vicious cycle of, okay, now I need to raise more money in the next 18, 24 months in order to keep this cycle going.
And you know who makes the most money from this? Google and Facebook. Because you're raising all of these significant money, and I got to grow my market share, so what do? I spend it on Google and Facebook. So all of this VC money is going to Google and Facebook. Do they spend it in local market here?
Mm.
Do they spend it here? I mean, how much money do these guys spend on BFM, for example?
Mm-hmm.
Very little. Google and Facebook is the biggest winner from this narrative.
Advertising. And I guess also promo codes, right? So things like, we were so used to being subsidized as consumers as well, where certain platforms had to, you know, we'll give you like a year free or something like
correct.
That. But now you're not seeing that anymore. In fact, I use an app, a intermittent fasting app called Zero. Mm. And every day I'm being asked to subscribe to the annual subscription.
There you go.
I use another app called Splitwise,
yeah.
where now it's limited the number of uses I can do on a daily basis because they want me to convert.
Yes.
Before that, there was no limitation. So
that's right.
People are looking at ways of making the model work. You make a big point here to note that it also impacts the psyche of the founder. Mm. You've highlighted a few things there. Is there anything else you want to add in terms of how overfunding negatively impacts the psyche of founders? Is there anything else to add to that?
No, I think, you know, for the founders themselves, sometimes you raise too much money, you also pay yourself a lot of money.
Mm.
So when they raise a lot of money, they say, I need a bigger salary. And then they become too comfortable.
Mm.
Because now they have a lot of money in the bank, you know, they buy a nice car, they have all of this. There are also founders who suddenly become too comfortable because now they raise a lot of money. And some of them, when they raise money, they sell some of their shares on the secondary as well.
Mm.
Right? So it's okay, I'm raising so much money, I'll sell some of my shares as well. I am all for founders selling some of the shares so that, you know, they can take care of their debts and all of those stuff. But when they become too comfortable, drive nice fancy cars, the hunger and the drive to build a successful business actually goes down, you know? And then the only thing that's forcing them there is the VCs pushing them and saying, do this, do this, do this. But their own personal hunger drops. So raising too much money also causes that kind of problems. And I think that's not good for the company as a whole when entrepreneurs lose that hunger because they become too comfortable.
Doc, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, we'll talk about your final two ideas that you want to see change the narrative here in the startup ecosystem, primarily in Malaysia and in Asia as well. Folks, you're listening to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today, we're exploring how the downturn in the startup ecosystem has changed investor perspectives and why startup founders will need a mindset change to succeed over the next few years. And helping me with this has been Dr. Sivapalan Vivekaraja, Senior Partner and Co-Founder at Scale Up Malaysia Accelerator. I'm Roshan Gunnison. We'll be back in just a bit, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Best for money, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, and I'm Roshan Kanasin. You're now listening to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Today on the show, we're exploring the downturn in the startup ecosystem and venture ecosystem and how that's changed investor perspectives and the five mindset changes needed to help founders succeed over the next few years. And helping me with this is Dr. Sivapalan Vivekaraja, Senior Partner and Co-Founder of Scale Up Malaysia Accelerator. And of course, this is on the back of an article he wrote in The Edge a few weeks back. Now, we've gone through the first three parts or the first three ideas, which was build an enduring business, change the growth model, moving towards more profit-driven model, as well as limit the amount of funds raised as an investor, keeping that in mind. The two other points that we're going to be talking about, spend time on the business, not fundraising, as well as looking as an IPO as a better exit. So, Doc, fourth one, founders and CEOs seemingly have spent a lot of time on the business. Should be spending time on the business instead of fundraising, as the current model encourages them to be in perpetual, constant fundraising mode. In fact, I think you call them chief fundraising officer as opposed to CEOs. So, how do we break founders and CEOs out of this cycle?
So, if you look at what's happening currently, the model of venture capital fundraising, entrepreneurs will raise money for 18 to 24 months. See, this is the model, right? You go out there, you raise money for 18 to 24 months, you try and double or triple your revenue. And then you raise another round again, and then you try and double or triple your revenue. Now, if you're going to raise money in, say, 18 months' time, you essentially have to start 12 months ahead. So you've just raised money, you started deploying the money, and next thing you're back on the rounds trying to raise your next round of money. So a lot of CEOs and founders are doing this. This is the narrative. This is how they do this, right? Keep raising money as many rounds as you can until you get to a stage where your company has a large enough revenue that you will get an exit. And to do this, they have to spend a lot of time talking to founders. I know founders, even of very large companies, including unicorns, that are constantly spending their time in the US and all over the place talking to investors all the time. Who's running the business? There's a bunch of other people running the business, not the CEO. But the CEO is a person with the vision and the person who actually came up with the business in the first place, who knows how to build this business. But because he's out there raising more and more and more rounds of funding, he's not running this business. And will this business grow effectively? Sure, if you're just pushing for revenue growth, you will continue to get revenue growth. Mm. But there often comes a time when you can no longer do your 2x, 3x revenue growth. And you might start doing 1x, 2x revenue growth. And then you can't raise money. And then people will say, oh, why did you do all of this? Where's your profitability? Where's your cash flow positive? But, you know, hey, I've been busy raising money. I have not been busy building my business. And when I talk to founders don't like this. They actually hate this whole thing about I have to keep raising money. Founders actually say, I wish I had more time to just run the business. Mm. You know, but the model says you got to raise more money. So what I'm saying is this. If founders need to raise less money, but if they can get to profitability and cash flow, they don't have to keep doing this every 18, 24 months. Mm. You might need to do like two rounds. 24 months, you do another one. After that, boom, you don't need to raise anymore because you're profitable. And you are generating cash. For the business to be able to do that, the founders must spend their time on the business, getting it to a stage where it grows profitably and has cash flow. If founders do that, they don't have to worry about fundraising because the business will generate the kind of cash that they need. But if their mindset is still about, I want to build and flip and I need to do this every 18 months, they will continue to be like hamsters, you know, on this, just doing the same thing over and over and over again. Who's running the business? Nobody's running the business. If you're lucky, you may have a COO or CFO who helps you to do this. But they are people who execute. The visionary is the CEO. If the visionary is not there running the business, it's unlikely you will build an enduring business. And, you know, entrepreneurs don't like this. They really actually want to focus on the business. So this model works for them. And honestly, for investors as well, if entrepreneurs do this, it's even better for them. Because if entrepreneurs are building a profitable business, they don't have raised so much of money. I don't dilute my shares too much. Because otherwise, you know, just like Anthony Tan only owns 5% of his business, if he had not listed his company at 40 billion valuation, he would have spent 10 years doing all of that for what? Mm. You know, and that's a problem a lot of... Anthony is an exception, by the way. The general rule is most companies cannot get to an exit. And then they will realize that now I only own 5-10% of my business, I'm working for the investors. That's not a good thing because it changes their mindset. So now they will not be happy because I'm like, I'm working so hard for the investors, not for myself. And I've had entrepreneurs telling me this as well. So this model of, you know, going out there and really building an enduring business is better for everybody, actually.
And when you build an enduring business, then the likelihood of an IPO becomes a more, I guess, appealing prospect as well, which leads us to proposal or idea number 5, to change the narrative in the ecosystem, where you suggest that the IPO is the better exit strategy in order to help you build that enduring business, that multi-generational business that we've talked about multiple times over the course of this conversation. Why do you believe that the IPO is the better exit strategy?
Okay. So when you talk to investors, most of them will say, I have two options for an exit, a proper exit, either an acquisition or an IPO. But almost all investors will tell you an acquisition is the preferred way of doing this. Mm. But hey, over the last 20 years, how many acquisitions have you seen in this part of the world? You probably can count on two hands. In Malaysia, you definitely can count on two hands, you know. There haven't been that many. So why do we keep saying an acquisition is a proper exit? It just does not happen. Some of my investments, as angels and all of that, the exit I'm getting is the entrepreneurs are buying me back. Mm. So fortunately for me, a couple of them have built nice businesses and is generating some profit. So now they're saying that, you know, why don't we just buy you back? And I'm making some good returns. But this is still the exception and not the rule. Now, if acquisitions are not happening, why do we keep pushing this agenda? Or even telling the entrepreneurs you will get an M&A, you will get an acquisition, just doesn't happen. But, and that is not controllable as well. You know, you cannot control who buys your company. Mm. But what you can control is, can you build a profitable business? Because if you can build a profitable business, even 5 million, 10 million ringgit in profit, you can do an IPO. So an IPO, in my opinion, is actually an easier exit than an acquisition. But the question is not whether you can do an IPO. The question is, can you get to 5 million to 10 million ringgit in profit, net profit? Any company that can get to 5 million, 10 million net profit, there are investment bankers out there who will jump at this opportunity to get you listed. And if you look at valuations these days, I'm just talking Bursa Malaysia, even conventional businesses, factories and all of that are getting a 20 times PE. Mm. Growth companies, technology companies can get 30 times PE. So if you are a growth company, an IT company, a technology company, if you make 10 million in profit, you're talking about a 300 million ringgit valuation. And that's really good valuation. So, and is that controllable? Yes. All you have to do is build a profitable business, get to 10 million in profit, and you can easily do an IPO. And when you do an IPO, investors can exit. So VCs, people like angels and all can exit, but you don't have to exit. So for me, that is your second journey in your business life. You build the first part of a journey where you raise money or whatever it is, you get to profitability, and then you do an IPO, and now you have a listed company, and you can do whatever you want with it. You can continue to build a business, you can stay in there, you can use your listed company shares as equity to buy up other companies. It is easy to raise money as a listed company as well. There's so many things you can do. That becomes your next journey, and you can continue to build this business like forever.
So
that's what I'm saying.
So an IPO is in the end. It's a new chapter.
It's a new chapter.
And
yes.
I think the big point that you made there is also that once you go once you get listed, you can raise money still to continue your growth process.
A lot easier.
That's what Amazon did for many decades and continued to
exactly
leverage on its on its listing status to raise capital. Mm. And I guess the interesting part is that if you build a profitable business and you list earlier, even at a smaller valuation, then you can grow that way. But I guess, you know, the whole unicorn hype kind of diminished that away, right?
Because
when you said, you know, you make 10 million, 30 times PE, that's 300 million ringgit valuation. So we're talking about a 60 to 80 million dollar valuation. Oh,
yes.
Doc, that's not a unicorn. Where's my unicorn?
Hello, where's your unicorn now anyway? How many unicorns are out there?
Yeah.
I know Malaysia has aspirations to create 5 unicorns. They wanted to do it by 2025. And now we're saying, no, I don't think we can do it. Let's make it 2030. Do we really need to have all of these unicorns?
Mm.
If I'm an entrepreneur, if I can get a 300 million valuation, do an IPO, and it now gives me the chance to build a longer term, enduring business, maybe 5-10 years from now, I will get a unicorn.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think you stand a better chance of getting a unicorn that way than to get a unicorn based on valuation from fundraising.
Mm.
Now, there are a lot of companies that have got so-called unicorn valuation just because they raise funds at a certain valuation.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they try and list it or try and exit, they can't get the same valuation.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're seeing a lot of down rounds. So a lot of large companies so-called getting to unicorn or at unicorn stages are getting down rounds. So we need to move away from this whole thing about I want to build a unicorn. I think the narrative should be I want to build a wonderful, enduring business that's going to last a lifetime. Because that really is what people like. If you look at Google and Microsoft and Amazon, that's what they're doing.
Mm.
They're all listed entities. Their businesses will last a lifetime. I think our entrepreneurs need to have that same mindset now. Not about, let me get to a unicorn and hopefully somebody will buy me or hopefully I'll get an IPO. Because that's not the way it should be done. Let's go back to fundamentals of why are you building this business in the first place? And if we get the fundamentals right, you know, you will build a successful business. Don't worry about it being unicorn. Because if you have a unicorn and you only have 3% shares, you might as well have a 300 million company and you have 50% shares.
Mm.
Because then you still control the company and you still have good shareholding. And you can build this over the longer term. That's what I'm saying.
Doc, always a pleasure speaking with you. Till next time, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Roshan. It's a pleasure.
Folks, I've been speaking with Dr. Sivapalan Vivekaraja. He's the senior partner and co-founder of Scale Up Malaysia Accelerator. And if you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on our website or download the BFM app. You can also find our shows on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast players. Look for Enterprise Explores. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This has been Enterprise Explores. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.